The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Coming up, we will be speaking to a young woman who is involved with OnlyFans. I'm sure if you haven't heard about it, you will. If you have any questions in relation to that, in terms of the lifestyle choices, I don't know. To be honest, it's going to be a learning curve for me. We'll make sure to listen, or you can watch the show as well, by the way, on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on our Facebook pages. Give us a like and a subscribe there. It really helps as well. So that's coming up and so much more besides. GEA Go are not streaming the Donegal versus Clare game in Castlebar at the weekend. Why can't Highland not live stream like the election coverage? Well, we would love to be able to do that. Unfortunately, it's a rights issue, and RTE and GEA Go have the rights to those games, and if they choose not to show them, no one else can show them. And I'll tell you, even simply standing in the grounds and doing a Facebook Live would get you into bother, let alone if we were to do it. Also, some more comments coming in. Charlie McConnell, Logan RTE earlier, unaccountable, unfit to be a TD when he cannot even appear on his local radio station to talk on one of Donegal's main industries, fishing. It is regrettable. I wish it were different. I have no ill will or ill feeling, and a good deal of respect for Minister McConnell Logan. But that also means that I have to respect his decision that he doesn't want to speak to me on this programme. Hi, Greg. To Mary T. Sweeney, election posters lying on the footpath at the Port Bridge in Letterkenny. What's going on? As somebody could slip and fall on them on this wet day. It's very important that also you help out the candidates, because a lot of them have put on their social medias, look, we've gone around, we've tried to find every one of them. If you see one of them, will you let us know? I did notice on the way to work this morning, some of Senator Blaney's are still up. Most of them seem to be down, but as I say, we have to help them too, and if we spot them, let them know. On to fishing, the boats are not coming back into this area because of the price of diesel. That's why they're opting to not land in Killybegs. Also on that issue, I want to go to Calms. There's a lot of you texting in on Calms as well. I have three children under Calms in Buncrana. I have to say they've been amazing, really caring and understanding and great support, which is good news. And, you know, when we talk about, say, for instance, 70% of children in certain groups not getting the services that they require, it doesn't mean that the 30% are not getting very good treatment as well. It's just that, wouldn't it be lovely if we could get equal treatment for all, not just dependent on where you are or what team you're engaging in? Greg, we eventually got an appointment with Calms, and all they were interested in was medicating them. When I refused, that was it. I ended up with a credit union loan to get help privately. Thankfully, he lives today to tell the tale, but it's with no thanks to our government. That's an interesting point there as well. My daughter was refused Calms, suicidal and self-harming. Thankfully, she got help from Jigsaw, but there is a waiting list there as well. Another, very often children won't take the medication that they've been prescribed by doctors for their mental health. They then self-medicate with drugs and alcohol and weed. I've seen children as young as 15 smoking weed to numb the pain. Yeah, indeed. And I don't think medicating a child should be the first port of call, though, either. You know, maybe they're saying, I just want someone to talk to me. I want to talk this through. I want someone to help me. I don't want to just be given a medication. And a lot of these medications, too, they are effective, but they can affect a child's ability to concentrate or to study. So it's not always the best option either. But I take your wider point, self-medication. It's not just young people do it. Adults can do that too. In relation to mental health, says another listener, I called an emergency number and got an answering machine. That should never happen. Then I called her GP and he said she's attention seeking, which is very, very unfortunate. 2 days later, she did attempt to take her life. There simply is no help out there for families in need of mental health support. I think in terms of general practice, things have improved an awful lot. I do remember going back in the day, you know, I mean, in terms of general practitioner, often a person presenting could be told to pull themselves together and that, you know, maybe they were too focused on the physical side of things. As I say, thankfully, things have improved. But a GP to conclude that a child is attention seeking is very worrying. But hopefully that is an isolated incident. 086 60 25,000 if you want to continue that conversation. We got this email in. We posted it on our social media as well. It's got a lot of traction. And we just thought it important to mention on the radio as well. Hi, I hope you're well. If it's okay, could you please give a mention to a good Samaritan who went out of his way to help on a sad occasion? To explain, sadly, can I just say, Caroline, it's okay to use the names, the people's names in this. Okay, just wanted to double check. And I'll start from the beginning. To explain, sadly, my lovely mammy, Helen Crawford, died in the last few weeks, and her funeral took place on Monday, May 27th in St. Eunan's Church in Rafoe. A lot of people travelled to the funeral from afar, including many of my colleagues from Dublin City University. I was so touched when the department I lead at DCU turned up at the funeral, having hired a minibus to bring them from Dublin to attend the funeral. I would later discover that things didn't go quite to plan on the journey from Dublin, as the minibus broke down on the A5 outside Sion Mills near the Ulster American Folk Park. We all know this is one of the most dangerous roads in Ireland. To make matters worse, they were stopped on a section with no hard shoulder and huge traffic volumes. They were stranded, and the Dublin bus driver was at a loss to know what to do. Lucky for them, Donegal private bus operator Paddy O'Brien of Terrific Coaches came upon the scene. Padder could see they were stopped in a very dangerous spot, so we pulled up to see if he could help. Upon hearing they were trying to get to a funeral in Rafoe and were going to be late, he contacted a few people he knew locally to see if he could get another bus to take them. When that failed, he just said to himself, "Right, everyone on board my bus, I'll take you there myself," and he did. Despite having his own passengers and being under time pressure, he got everyone to the church. So it would be great, if possible, to give him a shout out and let him know that the family of the late Helen Crawford are eternally grateful to him for his kindness. It's not an everyday occurrence and was brilliant, another brilliant example of Donegal people showing great kindness and compassion. That comes in from Celine. So what a wonderful, wonderful story. Paddy O'Brien of Terrific Coaches. He just happened upon a group of people travelling from Dublin to a funeral in Rafoe, tried to sort out an alternative bus locally. That didn't work. So he said, right, hop on the bus. And he made sure everyone was able to get to that funeral. And it's clear, listening to Celine too, it was so important for her friends and colleagues from Dublin to be able to attend her lovely mammy Helen Crawford's funeral. We all know how tough a bereavement is, but what a lovely story to have as part of the memories moving forward. And a great honour to your mum and a great honour to you, Celine. They must hold you in incredible high regard. Greg, the destruction of the mummified relics in Dublin is absolutely disgusting. Yeah, indeed, that's a story I didn't fully read, but the headlines definitely make for difficult reading. Morning, could you please wish the Finn Valley Community Health Forum Committee all the best with their health and well-being event tonight in the Finn Valley Centre at 7 to 9. Lots of love from Jude. Mary Lou did say that the referendums would be rerun. I sat and listened to her saying it. She lost my vote that night. Thanks for that, by the way. Lots of election posters still up, says another caller. Listen, pass on the details to us and we can pass them on to the candidates. How's about that? If you are seeing any election posters up or lying about, let us know and we'll pass those details on to the relevant candidates. Also, David James Show is coming live from Glen this afternoon at Kernan's, formerly Mickey Joe's. Well, Mickey Joe's Butchers is still there, of course, but the Kernan's shop being opened officially today, launched today, I believe, and David James is there, and my son's there as well, working, believe it or not, which is a great thing about sometimes the local stuff. Right, now we are going to speak to our next guest, who is Megan O'Neill. She is in the top 1% in the world of OnlyFans creators. She's an influencer, a boxer, and a mum, and now a guest on the 9 till noon show. Hiya, Megan.
Hello, how are you?
I think that really just rounds off your career perfectly now.
It doesn't. I mean, there's a little bit more in there, but I think, yeah, you've grown up perfectly.
Good morning. It's lovely to speak to you, Megan, from County Antrim. You're also a model, of course. You're a stay-at-home mum, a dancer, a mechanic, a gym owner, and an executive in the competitive market of PR. Are you also a porn star, or how do you describe an adult star? Because it's your own business, really, right? So yes. It's up to you how you define it. And I want to make sure I'm using your words and not the words just of an article someone else wrote about you, if that makes sense.
Well, I would call myself a porn star, but obviously when I am on the likes of TV and radio, I like to say OnlyFans creator.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more PG. You can say that online. Once you say the word porn star, everybody's like, whoa, stop this now. So yeah, I would call myself a porn star.
Yeah, so it's a title you're comfortable with. You're in control of that. It's what you have to say. Yeah. That's fine. So talk to me about how you got into modelling, because you were modelling at an early age, weren't you? And it's like talk to us about the type of modelling you were doing from your mid-teens onwards.
So when I turned 15, I always wanted to be a model. I used to watch, Tyra Banks on the TV, and I just thought this is amazing. But being 5'2", the catwalk was never something that I could ever get down. So I started modelling. I was with an agency very early on, and then I went on with myself. I was freelance. So I was freelance right from I was 15 right up until I left the industry when I had my kids at 23. So when I turned 18, I was doing a little bit of commercial work. And when I turned 18, I went straight to glamour. Modeling,
and how does that work? Do you kind of sort of seek that out, or does someone see some of your work and they're pretty much waiting until you turn 18 and then go, look, Megan, would you be interested in this type of work too?
I think when you're in the industry, you meet a lot of different characters along the way. So you meet kind of everybody that you're going to maybe work with. When you go into an industry, you learn everything about it. You know that there is the glamour, there is the, fashion, there is the catalogues, there's all this sort of thing. So you get to pick yourself. Nobody approached me. I decided myself when I turned 18, this is what I wanted to do. I was always exhibitionist. So I always loved showing myself, and it was this art form, and there was never any shame in it when it came to, showing my body off and stuff. So when I turned 18, I was like, yeah, this feels right. I'm going to do it. But then I had the kids when I turned 23, and I left the industry altogether.
So early adores, right? It's up to you. You can be proud of your body. You don't mind showing off your boobs or whatever, right? And you can deal with that, and you're in control. But then there's external forces, okay? So in terms of family or friends or people that you might meet in the street, like what kind of reaction did you get? And maybe that, maybe that gave you a buzz, or maybe you felt you were put down. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? Because I often wonder, what it feels like, from the external forces.
It is a lot. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that it's been an easy ride. Being from a very small town in the north of Antrim, people don't like change. People don't like different, especially here in Ireland. Everything's very much, shameful. Sex is shameful. And we're all from a Christian background, well, the majority of us anyway. So for me to turn to glamour modelling at the very start, my family were just, this was outrageous. How could she do this sort of thing? But as I grew and I developed as a person, and I started my degree and I was studying, people were kind of, I don't drink, I've never done drugs, I'm completely, other than having ADHD, which I was diagnosed with last year, I'm completely stable. So I think that this idea of she's losing her mind, when I started this whole sort of, ball rolling, that was my family's worry anyway, and my friends. But when they've seen me grow up and have kids, they've kind of said, she's actually quite sensible and stable. Yes, this is her career, but we can sort of identify that that's just her career, and she's actually this sane, stable, normal human being at the same time. But the bullying was catastrophic. No matter what I did, from a very young age, I was always different. Looking back now, I can see that I was on a spectrum, and I had ADHD, and I was just, I thought differently, I acted differently. I was never bad. Top of the class in school, very academic. I was in the grammar stream. I was studying to be a doctor. Then the GCSEs hit, and my brother was a drug addict at the time. And I kind of started to rebel, because obviously I was prepubescent. I had early trauma, in life, and I decided that I just started to rebel as any 15-year-old would, and I went down the modelling route. So at the start, it probably was a little bit of rebellion, but then I loved it, and it didn't really matter what people said. It didn't deter me. The bullying, the online bullying, it still goes to this day. There's threads online all about me. I get hate consistently every single day. Mm-hmm. I have had death threats. I've had everything.
The thing is, and it's really quite sad, is that there is quite a sizable, it seems, proportion of the population that feels that if you go down the career path that you have, because you share, you share so much of yourself, let me put it like that there, that means that you are open to absolutely everything. So in other words, if you as some might see overshare, that means then that you are a legitimate target for anything that they have to say. But you are, and you know what? Very sadly, we saw it too, you know, with the likes of Love Island and shows like that there, yeah. That if you put yourself out there, it doesn't matter. You have to be able to take anything that everyone feels they're able to give you.
Well, you see, I would look at that and I would say that the whole thing is boundaries and consent. And whilst people will tell me, you know, the people will try and gaslight me and say, because you've done this, you deserve this. And it's like, no, I've never done it to you personally, so therefore I'm not going to accept your criticism. I don't put myself out there to be criticised. If I'm going to be criticised, you know, the nature of it is I tell all the girls and the fellas that want to join, I'm like, you are going to be criticised. Does it make it right? Absolutely not. You know, people will always say, well, you deserve to have this said to you. Well, the onus isn't on me. The onus is on you not to be a bully and not to be an online bully and a critique. And, you know, if I haven't done something to you personally and you present to me with anger or distaste for what I'm doing, that's fine, but it's not personal to me. That's your issue, not my issue.
So going back 12 or 14 years ago when you first got into the glamour side of modelling,
you're giving away my age.
Yeah, your age is here in front of me. Hey, Megan, and do you know what? For some, it's probably an advantage, right? but was it Lads Mags and stuff? Because the world has changed so drastically now. And we'll get on to OnlyFans and how you sort of are in control of that more now rather than sort of having agents or people that might try and exploit you, what have you. But in the early times of your career, was it the Lads Mags? I'm trying to think back how much online stuff was there. I don't think it certainly wasn't monetized the way it is now.
No, I mean, there was no sort of online things back then. There was websites and stuff, but it was Lads Mags. It was all magazines. It was editorial work. It was physically in front of you. It was not online. It wasn't on the phone. I mean, it was Bebo back in those days, so there wasn't really much social media either, other than obviously Bebo. I think Facebook had maybe just started. I can't even remember. It was that long ago. So yeah, it was all magazines, all editorial, all physical prints.
And what was going on in your head in the early 20s when you're modelling, and I know that you had at least one of your children or one child at this time, but you're modelling, you're dancing, right? I could see them living in the same space, right? But then to become a mechanics apprentice. yes. So I'm just trying to think, right, there's a gap in my resume here. I think I might become a mechanic. How does that fit in?
I was always mad into cars growing up. You know, I was what they would have called a tomboy growing up. I played football. The thing with me is that it's always been very beautiful that my personality is very contradictory of each other. You know, on one hand, I'm this model and dancer, and then the other hand, I'm a mechanic working with oil and a boiler suit, pink boiler suit all day. But I think that's the beautiful thing about how I've become this sort of person, that you can't set me, you can't label me, and you can't put me into a box. This is my thing. But with the mechanic in, I've always loved cars, and I decided I want to learn more about cars. Obviously, I didn't know then that I was on a spectrum. Now I know, and it makes sense. I wanted to know everything. Obviously, I hyper-focus with ADHD, so I want to know everything about cars. If I become interested in something, I'll obsess over it until I understand all the workings of it. And I was apprentice mechanic for a year, but I left because obviously the money just didn't pay me.
Yeah, no, it did. I'm sure.
I think it was like $260 an hour.
So, in my word. So, in terms of then your modelling career, did it explode? Is it OnlyFans and that platform that sort of has been the game changer for you?
Back before I had the kids, you know, I had a bit of a name and I was coming up in the industry, then obviously fell pregnant. So I decided to come away. And you know what? I talk about this openly in podcasts. I did the right thing by society. I became the mum. I stayed at home. You know, I looked into child development. I brought my kids up the way that I believed was right. But there just was something was not right within me. I just wasn't myself anymore. I completely lost myself. And it was a couple of years ago, I decided, you know, I had my own gym. I opened my own female-only gym. I'm a powerlifter, champion powerlifter. I was doing all these things and I had all the success, but just still, I was missing. I would look back to my life and I would go, I loved doing that. That's where I felt most like
me. And do you know, in a way, that kind of, I presume, also validated your decisions as a 15 and 18-year-old. You know, I mean, I presume, I mean, we all kind of know ourselves. But there might have been times you looked back and said, well, did I make those decisions because this happened in my life or I was in that space at the time? But then as a mom heading in towards your late 20s, did it sort of validate and you go, you know what, actually, Megan knew what she wanted when she was 15 and 18 because here I am now. I'm a mom. I've had all this experience and I know that there's a gap in my life because I'm missing this.
Yeah, well, I've always, you know, I always laugh and I call myself very witchy. I'm very witchy and spiritual. And in my gut instinct, I always knew what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be. But I listened to society. I listened to the people around me that wanted to keep me safe and comfortable. My family, my parents, my friends, they all kept me in and kept me caged. And it grew to a level of resentment for them all because I was going, I haven't been who I've wanted to be. So my message is always very clear to people. I talk about it all the time on social media. Be authentic. Mm. Authenticity is everything. When you start to be exactly who you're meant to be, no matter what the people say, everything will come to your life that's meant to be in your life. So I always knew who I was meant to be and I just went back to myself.
I've spoken to a lot of adults who have got a what might be seen as a late ADHD diagnosis, and this is outside of your career choices. A lot of things begin to make sense for them, and they just wish, my God, if I'd have known this at such and such an age. As I say, separate to your professional career, is that the same story for you?
Big time. You know, I always felt different. I always felt, you know, I was very, very academic and I was very smart, you know, I was in the grammar stream, but there just were things that just didn't make sense to me, simple things that other people could grasp, and I was going, you know, why can I not understand that? It's not like I'm stupid, it's not like I'm not bright. As I got older, you know, the sort of the ways that I would rebel and the ways that I would look for attention, you know, was very, I understood everything in my life then made sense. It kind of gave me, you know, I would have meltdowns and stuff when I had the kids. That kind of brought my ADHD to the forefront. You know, I was overstimulated all the time. You know, I had two kids under two. It was intense. You know, I was a single parent from the very start. It was extremely intense. And I give myself, when I got the diagnosis, I give myself a lot of grace. It allowed me to then go, do you know what? There's nothing wrong with you. You know, doctors would try and diagnose me with things and I would say, no, I don't think I'm this and I don't think I'm that. You know, I don't agree with the psychiatry model of diagnosing people with, you know, personality disorders and stuff. My degree is in philosophy and psychology, so I don't agree with that model. But for me, it kind of opened my eyes and I went, there's nothing wrong with me. I just have ADHD. My brain does just work differently. So it allowed me to give myself grace and I never have meltdowns anymore. I know my triggers now and I step away before it gets to that point.
Right. So when when you returned to the industry, was it straight into the OnlyFans?
I went straight to OnlyFans. I sat with myself at a meditation session and I said, what would you do? And I said to myself, I would be a porn star. If I didn't have to weigh the weight of the world's opinions, what would I do? And straight away, I would be a porn star. I came back to this and came back to this. And I knew when I was 18, I wanted to be a porn star, but obviously society, I stayed away from it. But I always knew myself what I wanted to do. And I just said, F it, I'm going to do it. And I just went on to OnlyFans, made an account, got verified. Within 10 days, I shot straight up to the top 2% of the world and I've stayed at the top 1%.
I suppose without divulging the content, given the time, what do you think the secret to your success was? What were you doing different, do you think, to the other 99%? Like, do you use your Irishness, your accent, your sort of, you know, that might appeal to some people. I don't know, maybe your background coming from a more rural area. I don't know.
I think it was coming from a very small place in Ireland that kind of shot me to stardom because it was scandalous and it was out there. You know, I always say I am different and I always will have this appeal to be the best in what I do. But if I was in England, would I have shot to the same stardom? Probably not. But because I'm here in Ireland and especially Northern Ireland, people were just, oh my, this was scandalous. So I think that's what helped me shoot up there, as I was kind of the only one that I know of doing what I do. And I was very ballsy and very out there and very, this is me and I'm proud of who I am. And it kind of got people going, what the hell? What is going on here? So that's what helped.
It's inevitable that some of your subscribers or friends or neighbours, either curiosity for whatever it might be, I'm not sure if you know or you don't know, but if you're heading out for a carton of milk And you've just posted your latest content, right?
They have seen my innards.
Yeah, but my point is like, it doesn't matter. Does it? I suppose maybe the first time that would have been, but to you, it's like, it's all subs. It doesn't matter, does it?
It does not matter to me. With me, there is no shame. Like, I have no shame around sex. Like, we've all had sex. We're here because of sex. It is our life force. It's such a potent energy form. So, like, I'm not going to shy away from it. I do what I do, and I'm not shy about it. I don't care if people have seen it. I'm very proud of it. And listen, it's all money at the end of the day. It gets me to where I need to be.
And just in terms of the future, Megan, because there's lots of other stuff you're interested in, of course, but I'm just thinking, and I'm loath to ask any personal questions, but I know you're quite open and you can just deflect this one if you're not interested in answering it. But, I mean, obviously everything we've talked about now is about you, right? Your personal responsibility, your place in the world, how things affect you, how you can hope, how you can cope with it. But now it's clear from what you've said so far that your children are beginning to get a little bit older, okay? And yeah. You can't insulate them or protect them or have them think exactly the way you think. How do you protect them or do you? Or do you think that will form future decision-making for you in terms of for continuing in the career? It's just one thing I'd be curious of, but if it's too personal, please just bat it away,
listen,
Megan.
Listen, it's fine. I always get the question about my kids. And it's very simple, you know. Yes, I do what I do. My career does not define me. My kids grow up in a very sex-positive household. There is zero shame. So any shame that's sort of going to be put onto them, it's going to be from other people. Yes, I can only protect them to a certain point. But again, I am a very protective, very in-tune, intuitive mother. You know, anybody that knows me and knows my kids, I keep them completely off social media. I don't talk about them. Everybody knows they're there. But everybody knows that I'm a very good mum. You know, I've had all sorts. I've had the social services phoned. I've had the police come out. And it's laughable because everybody that knows me knows that you're not going to come for my kids. You know, I'm a boxer now. You'll not come for my kids.
Yeah, and I hope you know, but I wasn't questioning that because it's not my right.
No, listen, I get it all the time.
I actually wasn't really... My question was nothing to do with you being a good mom or not. I've no doubt about that, right? It's just in terms of, do you say, right, you know, they're heading to school. It would be a personal choice, not the intervention of any external bodies. But anyway, you've answered that. You talked about boxing, and boxing does have its knockers, but it's one of my favourite sports, right? I'm gonna admit that. But you had your first fight, right? And how did that go for you? It was early doors, not much training, mismatched opponent, but you got in there anyway.
Yeah, so I got this fight announced a few weeks back in maybe April. So I hadn't been training, and I knew that I wanted to go into boxing and stuff, and I hadn't been training. You know, I was working the full month of March, and I got told that I would have this opponent, but they were going to try and get me the right size of opponent. And I am only 50 kilo. This girl was 63 kilo. So I was like, right, okay. I didn't know anything about this. I didn't know that this was mental. This was mad. I was just like, yeah, no problem. So I took it on. I took the fight on and it got announced. And then whenever I met with my team, they were kind of like, what have you done? This girl, like, this is crazy. This isn't done in boxing. Like, even a couple of pound is a big difference in boxing. Like, this is just unheard of. And I was like, well, I've said it now. Like, I've fought all my life. You know, I grew up very tough. So I was like, I'm going to do it. So... I mean, the build-up to it was amazing. I really, really scared her, regardless of her height and her weight. You know, she was petrified getting into that ring with me because I am quite, I'm quite scary and intimidating.
Might be that eye on your neck.
That.
I don't know. And do you see your future? I mean, obviously, I'm not sure the setting of that fight, but presumably, Megan, you'd see yourself as a good match for the influencer boxing. You know, get on one of the KSI cards on that platform.
So that was, I was main event. It was my first fight and I was main event. And we went in and I won the first round. I won the first round by two rounds. You know, I was up two rounds. And the second round we went in and I didn't really understand the count. So I don't know anything about boxing. So when he gave me my eight count, you know, I kind of nodded to go. But he called the fight and I was raging because I was like, what's happening? Like, what do you mean? Like, we stopped. You know, I was ready to go. So I gave away the fight. Listen, it was fine.
I love it. That's the first boxer I've interviewed. And they said the reason they lost is because they hadn't checked the rules first. But hey, come here, look.
Even the rules were going on. I was doing my medicals. I didn't know anything about boxing getting into this. I was just like, yeah, I'm gonna jump in the ring. So I lost the fight, unfortunately. But listen, she was 2 stone heavier. So, like, I held my own. I had no marks. She left with a black eye. I was definitely the better boxer. I'm in talks on my next fight. Misfits is the way I'm going.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's not the last you've heard of me in boxing.
All right, okay. Listen, Megan, it's been nice speaking to you. Thanks very much indeed. Continued success with whatever you choose to do.
You know yourself.
Some people are going to look on and go, it's disgusting and all that. And others are going to go, live and let live. And the truth lies somewhere in between, I presume. Okay, thank you so very much, Megan. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. That's Megan O'Neill. She's in the top 1% in the entire world of OnlyFans creators. That's adult stuff, right? So she films her own adult stuff and what have you. I don't need to go into the details. But look, it's not a voice you often hear. We're talking history now with Dr. Joe Kelly. Imagine why, Dr. Joe. How are you keeping?
Imagine why, good Greg. Is good morning to yourself, Greg, and all in Highland Radio.
Right. We are going to be speaking about the history of railways in Donegal. It's kind of heartbreaking, you know. I posted a map on my social media of this country with no railways and then how it spread, and it spread into the west and it spread into the northwest and it spread into Inishowen, and then it starts to retreat again. And it's heartbreaking, isn't it? This infrastructure we had in place and now it's all but lost to the northwest.
Yeah, and look, I often say to you, you know, Don as in D-O-N-E in Donegal, are we Don? Are we the orphaned child of the 26 counties? Are we a phantom limb? We can talk about all those things. And look, we've just after having an election there, the county council election, which is the nation's democracy, a beautiful, wonderful thing. And just maybe take the chance to congratulate yourself, Greg, and Highland Radio. You know, you talked about maybe the rail service it could provide to Donegal. Well, what you provide, not just for Donegal, but for the Donegal diaspora in Ireland and throughout the whole world, it's amazing. And just to congratulate you on that there, it's a very, very important thing. And you brought democracy right to people's homes. And we exercised our votes, but you give us the chance, the opportunity, and an unbelievable service. So congratulate to yourself. You were a brilliant anchorman. I really enjoyed it. And to everybody in your team, well done.
Just
and
in relation to that, you know, I've think democracy is incredibly important, and I also think access to it is incredibly important. And this is not blowing smoke or anything or self-praise. I'm not interested in talking about it. It's an opportunity to explain to the listeners what the philosophy was. I started live streaming this show on the internet primarily is because I was contacted by someone who couldn't listen, couldn't hear, and YouTube and Facebook offer subtitles. And they're able to engage with everything that's happening in the Northwest through the medium of radio, but not only visual, but actually be able to read what was happening. So that person, and I presume hopefully it's reached other people, they were able to be as included in what's happening in their own area as everybody else. So that was the initial motivation for it. But the motivation for what we did on Saturday was for the people who can't get into count centres, or as you say, who from outside it, or hear it but don't see the buzz or whatever, as well as the audio. The radio's the absolute 99% of it, don't get me wrong, but it was to afford people also the opportunity who are housebound, who can't get out, or who feel disenfranchised, to be able to, on their telly or on their phone, to actually watch it. So if something happened in Buncrana, they could see that. If something happened in Donegal Town, they could see it. And I wanted as many people as possible to be able to feel as part of that, with the hope that maybe, and it's probably a long shot, with the hope that maybe at the general election or in 5 years' time, another 10% might be inclined to get involved in it because they feel more part of the process or understand it more. And that was it. Now, the praise and all is nice. I'm not comfortable with praise or what have you, but that was the motivation. But now whether anything comes from it and it comes to pass, that remains to be seen, but that's why it was done the way it was done.
Well, we all have a constitutional duty, Article 9.3 of our constitution. Fidelity to the nation and loyalty to the state is a fundamental duty of every citizen. And what you did in Highland Radio was you allowed people to realise that responsibility. And as you say, please God, people will become more engaged and realise that, particularly the county council, it's the nation's democracy. The people say, and we need to really realise how lucky we are as a nation that we are afforded this opportunity and that we should exercise at all times our political mandate. And on that, just we're talking about history. Donegal County Council has the privilege of being the first county council in the history of Ireland to nominate a presidential candidate. You see, Article 12.4.22 states that councillors, and this is a privilege that councillors have, that they can nominate presidential candidates. So every one of the councillors are elected, not only to mandated to serve the people of the county, but also they have the privilege to nominate a presidential candidate should they wish. And Donegal was the first county council ever to exercise that mandate. In fact, it was my father, the late Paddy Kelly, who was the first county councillor ever in Ireland to exercise that mandate by proposing Dana. And he was supported by Councillor Maureen Doohan. She was the first female mayor of Donegal, a Fine Gael councillor, and by Sian Maloney. He was Labour, I think, in Letterkenny. She got cross-party support, and it was just a wonderful action of democracy again. And while people may not have agreed one way or the other with her, they were giving her the mandate and the right. So again, us, the people, we vote for our councillors, and our councillors then have that wonderful privilege that they can nominate, should they wish, someone for presidential elections. And Donegal County Council historically was the first county to ever exercise that privilege. And again, that's the wonders and beauty of democracy. We're very, very lucky that we have a healthy democracy in that sense, and that people, it's brought right back to our own doorsteps. And you in Highland have much played a very, very significant and important part in our democracy. And thank you. It's not maybe on me to say that, but from a person that loves politics, I just can't appreciate enough and say thank you enough to Highland Radio and your team.
Well, that's far too nice. Also, too, you talk about democracy, and you know what we might do? We might take the news and then come back if that's okay, because we're going to talk about the railways.
Excuse the pun, but we need to get back on track.
Yes, the chance would be a fine thing. But you talk about how important a council is right? So you could say arguably, and I wouldn't argue it, but the defective concrete is the biggest issue in the county at the moment. And then the public people were so moved by that they got together and they organised and they put candidates up. So in terms of the biggest issue that's facing this county at the moment, the democratic process means now we have four people directly affected by that who are in the council representing those people. Out of 37, four is a considerable percentage, what, about 5 or 6 or 7%. I mean, that is democracy in action, isn't it? People stood on an issue and other issues. They were voted in. And now the makeup of that council for the next 5 years has a significant percentage of people representing all of those people affected by this issue. I mean, if that's not democracy, I'm not quite sure what is.
Yeah, it is that true. But maybe, you know, and it's wonderful to see that. And it's not just the make candidates, and I congratulate them on their election. But there were other candidates, independent candidates, people that, you know, maybe 2 months ago weren't thinking of politics and now they're councillors. It's wonderful to see democracy alive like that. And see, the councillors are the bread and butter people of our communities. And we should be ever so grateful for them, irrespective of their politics, irrespective of their parties. They're the people that deal with the real issues in our communities, the tar, the streetlights, the planning applications, the bread and butter issues. And hopefully, as you say, mentioned the Mecca, that the Donegal County Council now have a mandate as a joint council to say to the government, look, this is an issue for us. There are people suffering in this county. There are people in homes that shouldn't be in the homes that they're in with the way the mic is. And hopefully, but it's going to take time, hopefully this will push on a little bit further, the resolutions, and hopefully people will get a little bit more comfort and a little bit more ease. But we have a serious, serious problem with Mica. And it's not even the physical building problem we have. I would be very concerned about the mental stress that this is putting on families, on mothers and fathers and children. And we can't measure that. And maybe that is evident in the vote, that people went out and voted emotionally, that these were people that were going to articulate for them. So, yeah, you're quite correct about that there. But at the end of the day, they have to also deal with the other bread and butter issues. And I'm sure that they will do that and they'll grow into that. And hopefully the whole council, and if you listen to the councillors when they were elected, they realise that they're elected for all the people, irrespective of those who voted for them or didn't vote for them. And I have no doubt that they'll work together for the benefit of Donegal and take the Dun out of Donegal as a group of councillors and, please God, no longer be the orphan child of this state.
OK, we're going to be talking about the railways, but we have to take a quick break and the news. Dr. Joe's going to stay with us. Any comments or actually questions about, the establishment and then the demise of the network in the Northwest, please get in touch with us now. Back in a sec.